At InDigital, we know the public safety professionals hold themselves to a high standard. In fact, standard doesn't do it justice. In over 25 years working alongside you, carrying millions of calls over our IP networks, your dedication has inspired us. That's why our ESINet goes beyond industry standards, not only I3 compliant, but designed to adapt to future development for a network you can count on when it matters most. Learn more at InDigital.net.
If Within the Trenches has ever taught you something, opened your eyes to what it is like to be a 911 dispatcher, or has inspired you to become one, then help support us and join our Patreon. Get exclusive bonus content, one-of-a-kind swag, discounts on merchandise, ad-free early access to new episodes, and much more. To join, please visit patreon.com/WTTpodcast. And if you're an industry partner, we have something for you as well. And now, for the show.
This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them. This episode is sponsored by InDigital, and a big shout out to Facebook subscribers as well as patrons of the podcast. Thank you very, very much. I wouldn't be able to do what I do if it wasn't for all of you, but of course for all of you as well who are watching, listening, sharing, supporting. Thank you so, so very much. And it's a happy 10-year anniversary of this podcast. 2023 marks 10 years, man. 10 years. Woo. It has been, it's been pretty crazy. It's been an experience for sure, but I wouldn't change a thing. I love it. And we are just short of 2 million downloads. And this podcast is heard in over 60 countries. So again, thank you very much for all the support. And I appreciate it more than you know. So there's a lot of things coming up, more powerful episodes, a lot of bonus content for subscribers, and just content in general that's going out there. I recently bought a gimbal for my phone that will assist me with a lot of different things that I'm going to be doing at different conferences, speaking events, and just a lot of different things that I'm going to be doing. So stay tuned for all of this cool stuff and a couple secret projects that are coming up that subscribers will be learning about here soon. So now that I've got all that out of the way, I'm super excited to have my guest on today. And I think we've actually been talking about this for a little while now. So I'm super happy that we're finally getting to do this. And my guest today is Marissa, and she is a telecommunicator and CTO with North Carolina State Highway Patrol. Hello. Good morning. Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. This is awesome. I'm so ecstatic to be here.
Oh, good. I'm super stoked to have you on here as well. Finally, I think we've been talking about this a little bit since I saw you in Kentucky, but I think we talked even more a little bit when we very, very first met in North Carolina at that conference.
Yeah. You know what? We might've, gosh, that seems like it was so long ago.
Right.
It was pre-COVID.
That's true. It was pre-COVID, but also right before the area there got smacked with a hurricane.
Yes. Yes, it was. I can't remember which one it was. I'm trying to remember. I think it was Matthew. It might have been. But that one was one that we were like, oh, it's not a big deal. We're just going to have a little bit of rain. And it flooded us out. And it was a lot of the 911 centers were just underwater. It was rough for them.
I remember everyone there was saying, so when are you leaving again? And I told them, and they said, yeah, no, you're going to leave today. And I said, what? They're like, if you don't leave, yes, you're going to get stuck here. And I said, well, maybe I can help out at one of the centers. They're like, you need to get out of here.
Yeah. So we had planned, there was a group of us from work who had planned a trip to New Orleans, and mm-hmm. we had planned it out, everything. One of us was going to fly. One wanted to drive. So I ended up riding with her. We didn't get called into work or anything extra because we weren't expecting anything other than heavy rain. So we were in New Orleans when Matthew hit, and we had to come back in the aftermath. And it should be, New Orleans is like a 12, 13 hour drive. It took us like 16.
Oh, because man.
They kept telling us to go to 95, and we couldn't because 95 was shut down. And we ended up South Carolina, out by Rock Hill. And I was like, wait a minute. I know how to get home from here. So we ended up cutting up north from there. But it was like, oh, my gosh. You want to talk about mom guilt? I had boys at home. I mean, they were old enough, and they were fine, and they were with a family member. They were great. But I was like, man, out there. Yeah, I mean, and they were far enough inland. They didn't really have any big, but I was like, man, my kids went through a hurricane without me. I was like, oh, man, this is not good.
That I can't even imagine that. But yeah. Also, when I got back home and I saw everything that was going on, and I was reading social media posts, like, I felt bad for leaving.
Yeah. It was definitely a caught us by surprise type thing.
Oh, man. Definitely. Yeah. That was something else. Yeah. Well, again, I'm super happy to have you on here finally. Yeah. And, you know, we last saw each other at the New Jersey conference, and very well done there. And we're going to get to some of the stuff that you do at different conferences and everything and in sessions that you do. But let's go back in time, because you've got about 12 years or so in 911, 10 with the Highway Patrol, but, you know, over 20 years of experience. So you've been doing this for a long time. But how did you get involved to begin with? How did you get into public safety?
My parents and my grandfather all ran on an ambulance squad in Jersey. That's why, like, I try to go to Jersey every few years. That's where my family is. They're about 45 minutes south of Atlantic City. And I actually have a plaque I had to go back and get redone from 1982, which was a year after I was born, where my dad got ambulance driver of the year. So they were really into that. And then they moved down to North Carolina when I was probably four. It was before I ever started kindergarten. But my family had always, I just kind of grew up around it to some extent. My mom ended up being a nurse. My dad ended up having some health problems and really couldn't run anymore. But I had a really good friend who ran rescue at the local rescue squad. And I would go out there and hang out. And I was like, this is cool. So I end up graduating. I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. So I end up like, I'm going to do this EMT thing. So got my EMT, and the rescue building at the time had volunteers. So I was just volunteering there because I had just had my first son. He was like 6, 7 months old. Mm-hmm. And they had an EMB class. And I was like, well, I'm not doing anything else. I could get a babysitter for a few days. Let me just go check this out. So I took the EMD class. And then it was a city 911 center. So the police officers and EMS, we always hung out. One of them was like, you know, you should really apply for this position. And I was like, oh, okay. I was just like, this is a decent job. It's got good benefits. I'm a mom. I need, yeah. And I that first day, it was like, I fell in love with it. And I was like, yep, this is it. So I started with 911 for 2 years. And then I took a little bit of time out because I needed to stay home with my kids. My one son was born in 02. My youngest was born in 05. And the person whose place that I took at the police department, she had left to go to Highway Patrol. And I had always heard that anybody worth their salt goes to Highway Patrol. And I was like, well, that's where I'm going to be. So when he started kindergarten, they had an opening, and I was like, I'm going to do it. And at the time, you had to have 2 years just to even be considered. So I just barely like eased in under that 2 years, and I got hired on and went through some of the training, ended up changing from where at my first duty station, I ended up transferring to Troop C Communications in Raleigh. And that was probably one of the best things I've ever done for my career. I had a really good mentor, really, really good mentor. So just kind of, I don't know, it's weird how your career paths change, because what I was doing 20 years ago is not what I'm doing now. And I had a career change 6 months ago, and it's just weird. It's just weird how the little shifts. But yeah, originally, like, this was not on my radar. When my supervisor said, you're going to general instructor school, and I've said this in plenty of classes, I was like, no, I've heard it. It's in North Carolina to be an instructor. It's a 6 weeks course condensed into two.
Oh, man.
Your final is an hour and a half long presentation. It's an hour now, I think, but you get 5 minutes. If you're above or under, you fail. Yeah. So I was like, So I suffered through it. And then she was like, you need to start working on classes. And I was like, what for? And she goes, you're going to start teaching them. I was like, no, this is not. She said, yes, you are. And I was like, fine. Like, I begrudgingly stepped into this portion of my career because I was really like, no, this is not me. But it's just, it's interesting to see how you think you have your career completely figured out. And then the curveballs. It's crazy, but it's good. It's been great.
There's always a curve, right? There's always a curve or something that happens. And sometimes when you're right at the beginning of it, or even sometimes in the middle, you're thinking, is this really what I'm supposed to be doing? And then it just clicks and everything works out. But let's rewind a little bit back to when you were growing up. Do you remember like hearing any of the traffic over the radio, or when you got a little bit older, depending on, you know, on your dad, because you said he had some health issues, so he couldn't do a lot of runs. But did you ever get to ride along or go like to the base or anything? Like, what do you remember as a kid?
I never went to go to the base. The funny thing is like, and it's funny slash sad at the same time. So my grandfather was a medic in the Army during, I can't think of it. It's not Korea. It's not Taiwan. What's the other one? I cannot think of the name right now.
Well, so he was involved in
he was a war medic. He was a war medic with the Army.
Right. Yeah.
I did not know until I read his obituary. I knew.
Oh, wow.
I knew he was like had some medical experience prior to EMS, but he never spoke about it. But when he got out, he ended up just continuing on with that. And he told the story. So my grandpa was always, he's one of those ones, like he was so stoic, but when he would get into his little groove, he was hilarious. So he had gone to deliver a baby in a chicken coop.
What?
In a chicken coop. No lights whatsoever. I don't know how it happened that the lady was in the chicken coop. I have no idea. But they were in a chicken coop, like the lady full birth, her kid was out there with her. There's two or three EMTs, the kid's holding the light and they're trying to see what they're doing. They end up delivering this baby. And my grandpa goes, well, hey bud, what do you think about that? And the little kid's like, I don't know why he's out up there in the first place. I was like, man. So my grandpa always talked about the runs that he did, and he was in the same, they lived in the same district where I would volunteer at. So there were times I had to go over there and, you know, we'd EMS chit chat back and forth. I had another cousin up in Jersey. He was a volunteer firefighter. And I remember being at my aunt's house. That's where we always stayed when we went to go visit. Mm-hmm. And he would like almost throw the couch backwards when that pager went off. Like we would be sitting there, everything was fine. The next thing I know, I'm getting flipped backwards. He's running out the door and I'm sitting there going, what just happened? What just happened? I'm like 10, 11, 12. And they're like, oh, Brad got a call. And I was like, for what is he doing? Like it didn't click then. Now I get it. I still don't think I ever like flipped couches going. It just threw me off. I was like, I'm so confused. But my dad was a big scanner buff. So he would listen to some of the stuff. He was a ham radio operator before he passed. KF4KUW, that was his call sign. And if you know anything about ham radio, a lot of things they do is those last three letters, they'll do like a make up a name. Mm-hmm. So one of his buddies was BJ4LCL, Lumpy Cat Litter. So we were like trying to figure out one for my dad. And so I came up with Kisses Ugly Women. My mother was not pleased. she was not pleased at all. But growing up, I would hear like the chatter and stuff like that in the background, and it would make sense to him. And for me, it was just like, it took time for me to figure out what it was and just like, oh, okay, that makes sense now. So it's kind of intermittent through my life as far as a kid, the way it wove in. Funny thing is Facebook's been really good. So my dad was the youngest mm-hmm. of the kids, and they all, with the exception of one or two, there was like seven or eight of them, but my dad was the next to last to pass. So I didn't have a lot of history about my dad's side of the family. So through Facebook, I found cousins, like the brothers and the uncles, kids and things like that. Come to find out, like four or five of my other family members are firefighters.
Oh man.
I was like, I am completely blown away. It just blew my mind that there was that much of a presence in my family. Now I'm like, okay, it makes sense. It's in my blood.
Yeah.
It just is.
Is there, I can only imagine that you would have that sense of that pride, right? To continue yeah. on this full on bloodline of, you know, public safety and service and all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very neat tradition. My dad, I'm going to age myself right here. Rural routes. Anybody remember those? Like, we didn't always have E911. I lived out in the middle of the county. That was my address. And I remember one time, and this, my dad was a jokester. So he was working in the wood shop and he cut the artery on his wrist. So he knew what to do. So he put pressure on it. And he was like, hey, I cut myself. I need you to call 911. Or at the time, it was a 7-digit number.
Yeah.
We didn't even have 911. And he was like, tell them the SR numbers, because otherwise they're not going to be able to find me. They need the state road numbers. So I was like, okay. So he told me what to tell them. And I was like, never in my life do I'm not going to need to know this. Joke's on me. That's what we use to have a patrol. So it's neat to see the little imprints here and there. Where it's like, I don't think I need this. And then all of a sudden I do. It's super cool.
It's kind of like, not exactly the same, but it's a little bit like how, you know, you're sitting in high school, right? And they're teaching you certain math and you're like, when am I ever going to need to use this? And then somehow, some way later on, whether you're teaching your own kid or there's something that you're doing that you're using whatever math for, you're like, oh damn, I guess the teacher was right. I did need to use this.
I can't tell him that. Right. Now I understand why I needed it. Yeah.
Oh man. So that is awesome. So you come from a complete family worth of public safety and again, public service and everything. So you end up going and you're doing this, you're told that maybe you should try to, you know, this other position, and you got up in there. Like, did you do a sit along first in dispatch before you went for, interview or anything?
I went in flying blind on my first day.
Oh, snap.
I went in and just kind of sat down, and my first trainer was Nancy, and she was a sweetheart. Loved her to death. But Nancy started training me, so we started talking about it. And I remember my first 911 call. So it is crazy. And this was a small city department, but we did do police, fire, and EMS just for the city. And so it's balls to the wall one day. And she was like, I need you to go answer that phone. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I go and answer it. It's 911 or it was a regular line and it's a bank alarm. And I was like, okay. So I'm trying to like think, like there's no checklist. I'm just like, okay, where's it at? In my brain, I'm going, oh my God, the bank's getting robbed. It wasn't. It was just a false alarm. But there for about 30 seconds, it was like sheer panic. And I was like, Nancy, bank's getting robbed. And she was like, what?
It's a scary moment, right? Because there's a lot of, for those who are watching and listening, there are different procedures, which I will not say here. All I'm saying is that there's procedures. And if for whatever reason, like if there's a new person, right, and they don't know that procedure, then it's like all hands on deck, right? Yeah.
Yes. And after I talked to her, and she was like, okay, no, it's an alarm. It's alarmorous. So it's fine. And I was like, oh, okay.
Right, like, ooh, heart be still.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So that one was more on the job training than anything else. Now the patrol's different. So when I went to the patrol, we have our 12-week program, roughly. We have a certain number of hours we have to meet. But back then they were doing patrol schools. So we would go to the training academy. We would stay there Monday through Friday. It was 4 weeks, and we would graduate at the end. So we had our certification program through the State Highway Patrol. That was so cool because it wasn't just dispatchers from my troop. It was dispatchers from all over. So like one of us is left, two of us, and they're in other troops. But honestly, it was life-changing. It was life-changing in that, and this is one of the things I'm building a class on now, mm-hmm. but I was like, one of those things was like, it was ABC. It's all about Connie. She was our assistant commandant or something, but she's the one who made me come to Troop C and made me start teaching. But it was like, it's all about me. And I was like, and at first I was like, but then it was like, hey, wait a minute. And I took a really hard look and reevaluated my life. And when I graduated and went home that weekend, I told my husband I wanted a divorce.
Oh, wow. That literally did change your life.
Yeah, it did. It did. And it was rough there for a little bit. But my boys now will tell you that's the best thing that's ever happened to them, because we make better co-parents than we do spouses. But it really kind of changed my focus on things. I was like, wait a minute, why can't some things be about me without it being selfish? Mm-hmm. And I reevaluated, and it actually, I mean, we're 10, 12 years out now. I mean, and it was a good decision. It was a good decision. But our training program, we did those 4 weeks, and then we get cleared. And what we'd like to tell our trainees is like, it really takes you like 2 years to feel like you're really seated in your position and really feel confident and comfortable in what you're doing. So a lot of it was just kind of recorrecting. When I transferred from B to C, I almost cried my first day.
because what happened?
Well, I knew like the procedures were the same. Everything was the same. The systems were the same, but the voices were different. Mm. And I had to relearn the voices. So the first day or two, it was like a foreign language, even though it was the same. It was like a foreign language. So it took me a little bit of time when I transferred. It took me about day three, it was good. But those first 2 days, I really thought I had made a mistake. And I was like, I want to go back to my old troop. I don't want to do this. But you know, it worked out. It worked out really, really well. But the patrol definitely had a more stringent program for training.
It sounds like it. So when you get in there, so you said you go there the week. And then I'm guessing you're home, right, for the weekend, and then you go back. What does it all entail? Like, are you like running drills and shit, or what? Like, what else are they doing with you?
The funny thing is, so our training campus has dorms, and at the same time, there was a cadet school going on for the troopers. So we were in these little dorms, and I had a radiator. Like an old radio, and it was so hot, and we couldn't get it to turn down. So I ended up sleeping with my window cracked like that much. And I woke up every morning by listening to the cadets run PT, like push-ups and everything else.
In the morning.
Yes. 4 or 5 a.m. We're snugging up in our little twin size bed with our comfy blankets we brought from home, and we hear them count, and we're just like, meh. But it's not us. But we had a lot of classroom stuff. They did incorporate the state certification, which is 1 week long. But what we do is the same, but it's different. So there's a lot of different things that we do differently than what 911 does. Our aviation is one thing. So we got these blocks of instruction on how to fine tune your CAD entry, how to fine tune your radio procedure. I went in thinking I don't have any errors, I don't have anything that needs to be corrected, I'm okay, and came out more refined, way more refined. So it's kind of like a tweaking. It's a tweaking, and then just kind of learning more about what the patrol does versus what 911 does. Because like I said, it's the same but different. It's the same but different.
Oh man, it's it sounds like there's moments where it can be intense though. with a lot of that. And I say that only because I'm just going off of my own experience years and years ago now, when I was still dispatching in Florida. I had gone in for for a physical test as well as a written, because there was our records clerk there. Her husband was a Florida highway patrolman, mm-hmm. and he kept telling me, you know, I can help you get in. I think you'd be really good as a trooper. And I was like, okay, I'll try it. We'll see what happens. And yeah. I get there for the physical, and I'm running through it, right? There's a time limit, and you got to make it within this time limit. And one of the parts, I had to drag this 100-pound, it was like 100-pound dead weight, but it was shaped like a person, right? So
yeah,
I'm having to drag it from one side to the other. That's part of the course, and my right leg cramps up.
Oh,
and I fell back, and when I fell back, I think it was my right foot, my shoe flew all the way up in the air. And the drill sergeants that are there, they are yelling at me, and they're like, get your ass up, Martinez, get up. And I'm like, okay. And I make it
running around with one shoe on and one shoe off.
Well, dude, so here's the thing. Like, it had rained earlier that day. And so where we're doing this course, it's like wet and muddy.
Oh.
And so I finished it with one shoe on, half a sock on, and my feet are all, you know, muddy and everything. And someone brought me my shoe, and I made it. I had a minute and a half left to spare, which thank the Lord for that. But one of the sergeants comes up to me, and he's like, Martinez, you got a lot of heart. He goes, but you need to eat more bananas. You need some more potassium in your life.
There is absolutely no way I would even think, even younger, like 20 years ago, nope, I'm not doing it. It's not for me. Some people, they love it, and that's great. And we have a ton of really great troopers, but that is not for me. No.
It was pretty gnarly. It was fun. But when I got home, I was telling my family about it, and I just remember my mom and my siblings were just cracking up. And my grandmother too. She's just laughing and laughing and saying all this stuff to me in Spanish, and it was
the
most hilarious thing. But I was happy that things did not work out for that school, because of doing a lot of different things now. But
it's that little career change.
Yes, those curves.
It's like that little curveball, and you're like, okay, what am I going to do now?
Right. Now, what are some of the differences from your original center to where you're at to where you're at now? Is it, do you not do police, fire, EMS now, and you did before? Or what are some of the other things that are different?
I started doing police, fire, and EMS. I actually dispatched the squad I volunteered for. So that was super cool to be able to do.
Oh, nice.
It was one standalone center. So we only had that one police department, the one fire department, the one rescue squad. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't uncommon for our guys to come in and sit down and talk with us, like, hey, how's your wife doing? Hey, how are the twins doing?
How many hours a day was that then?
We worked 12s.
12s?
Yeah, we did a 2-2-3. So, I mean, it really wasn't too bad of a schedule. Mm-hmm. Funny thing is, like, I was pregnant with my youngest son, and I had weird cravings, and it was like a Sunday morning, and all I wanted was potato salad. That's all I wanted. So I sent one of a message, and I was like, can you just go to Walmart for me real quick? And they're like, what do you need? And I was like, I just want a big bowl of potato salad. Okay. He brings me the family size tub of potato salad at like 8 o'clock in the morning.
That was amazing.
So the original department that I worked for was a lot smaller. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew each other. It's still that way now. It's a really great department. I would, they've since been integrated with the county, so they don't stand alone with their dispatching anymore. But if they did, it would definitely be somewhere I would be like, yeah, let me go work part-time there. So the highway patrol is different in that we don't do police or fire. We don't do EMS. So we only have to do with law enforcement, which while it's less of a workload there, We have three troops in our comm center, Troop A, Troop C, and Troop D, and that's 43 out of the 100 counties in North Carolina. So it's not uncommon for us to be working multiple counties at one console. So it just depends on where you're sitting, but sometimes it's three or four or five trying to navigate them. On a snow day, it gets real interesting because you just, when they call, you put them on the bottom of the list and you go to the top of the list and you call your next one and just, you know, work it out. So it's the same, but different. Cause our guys still have things that we need. They still get into, you know, incidents. I always go back to like trust in your gut always.
Yeah.
But there was one who was out with a disabled motorist and I was like, you don't sound too good on the radio. Are you okay? And he was like, yeah, I think I'm all right. Next thing we know, old boys punched my trooper in the face.
Oh, geez.
So, I mean, luckily everything was good to go and it was fine. And he got him in, you know, in the car and they took him to jail. So we still have that officer safety things. We definitely have the officer safety things. And we coordinate a lot with like Center for Missing Persons for silver alerts and amber alerts and blue alerts. So it's the workload for us, it's about the same as far as 911. We have a bigger comm center, obviously, fully staffed. We're like 40, I think, versus we had two dispatch per shifts. There were sometimes at 911, at the 911 center, I would work by myself. Or I would come in on my days off to work lunch. So somebody could, you know, hey, I got a doctor's appointment. I was going to take my lunch. Can you come in and work while I'm gone? Yeah, sure. Not a problem. So,
which is kind of interesting because you're on lunch right now. You're at work.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So the lunch break podcast, the timing worked out perfectly on that.
Yes.
Perfectly.
Yeah.
So, oh yeah, definitely. So it's, you know, I love what I do now. I'm still a telecommunicator, but I only do it on like an as needed basis right now because staffing issues. Honestly, everybody's got staffing issues.
Right. Right.
Right now I can go back and work part-time in the comm center. So I picked up six shifts this month. And I can still kind of stay in the comm center. Cause I think in my heart of heart, I'll always be a telecommunicator, no matter what I'm doing, no matter where I'm going, my brain and my heart's always going to revert back to that.
Oh, so for sure.
I'm super happy that for the time being, I can still be in the comm center and still have input and things like that. And it's good. It's good. This change is different, but it's good.
So at the Highway Patrol, so you said it's about 40 people, fully staffed. How many people are on the floor at a time for each shift? And is it still 12 hours or is it 8 hours?
We do 12s. Each comm center gets to kind of choose their own schedule. Ours is a little weird. If you've ever been in any of like the Facebook groups and they're like, hey, does anybody have ideas for schedules? I'll get tagged. Somebody will tag me because I have a color coded version of it.
Oh, perfect.
Well, it's weird. It's weird, but you work your butt off for 2 weeks and then you take it easy for 2 weeks. That's the easiest way to put it.
That's cool.
But usually when they have 12 consoles on the floor, so usually 8-9 is really good staffing for us.
So you, when you're sitting there, if you like look up a little bit, does it just look like a cube farm? Just like consoles?
We have three pods, which are basically just, you know, your desks are stuck together. And so, yeah, it's like it's prairie dogging. That's what we call it because somebody will say something from across the room and you'll just be like, what? You know, you'll see somebody pop up like that. So, yeah, it's a cube farm, which our old crew, see, and this is the other thing. Every time something changes within the comm center as far as staffing, the whole feel of the crew changes. And so our crew struggled for a little bit because our shift supervisor had retired and it was just like, wait, it was so weird. And it was so different because we would all come in and look for her and she wouldn't be there. And so we kind of had to reorganize a little bit and I don't know. It was just weird. It's people underestimate how much things change just by one person coming or going.
That's very true. Yeah. There's an impact that just one person can have or a couple people.
Yeah.
And then you have to rework everything, right? Again, shifting, curveballs, like all of it.
I mean, yeah, you just adapt and compromise and overcome and make it work. But for the most part, there's usually two or three people in the pod with you. And so, and we all work together all the time. I mean, you spend half your life with these people. So we always cut up and carry on when we can. And I think it makes a difference for how well the crew kind of gels instead of it just being back to everybody not talking, not sharing things and things like that. It makes a difference. So sometimes the pods kind of stick to themselves, but every now and then, like, yeah, we'll prairie dog every now and then and be like, what are you doing over there? You know,
I think that's really good because it makes me think about my dispatch center. So there's more consoles in there now. I was just there a few weeks ago, but when I was there, there was five, and so we had main phones on one side and main radios and our lean, which is basically, it's like NCIC, but in Michigan, lean. So that was also backup radio and backup phones. And then our fifth console would be for, you know, if we had some craziness that was going on, like bad weather or something, we would call somebody in. It was the supervisor console, but no one really ever sat there unless we were bringing people in. But it was always good if I was on main radios and I heard those on the phones on the other side. If you hear them typing real hard and fast, you know shit's about to go down, right?
Yes, yes.
Or the prairie dog, like you said, to yell over. Because when I would be on phones, if I've got a high priority complaint going on and I know they're going out there already, you know as well as I do, we repeat what the caller is saying out loud so that everybody in the room, can hear it. Yeah. But in bigger centers, you can't always do that. But it sounds like you guys are still able to do that to a point, which is good.
Oh, yeah. And we are to a point. We've still got, even though it's spread out a little bit, we've still got the ability to be like, hey, I got something here. And just kind of. And the key thing, it's so funny because there have been times like I just finished my bachelor's degree in May, working on my master's now.
Congratulations.
And they could it would hear me typing away, and they were just like, are you okay over there? And I'm like, yes, I'm just doing homework. And they're like, you're worried there for a minute. I was like, no, it's cool. So the other thing is Highway Patrol does phones and radios. We do not have call takers. If we do, it's a very rare thing. So that we do that, you know, I'm sorry, did you just say, and you're like kind of, and then you'll wait for somebody to pick it up and they'll be like, oh, and so they'll key up on the radio and be like, hey, caller's advising, da 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 da. So we can still kind of those moments when people say things out loud, it's always like either really messed up or really hilarious. One of the two things. It's going one or two ways. We just got to wait to see how this plays out.
That is always, it's always fun too, in a sense. I say fun. For those who are listening who are not in public safety, they're like, what do you mean fun? I just mean to be able to see how everyone comes together to work. Like, we could be talking about whatever and then bam, you jump right in and you're working and working and working. And then when you're done with whatever call it is, like I was saying, you know, and you just jump right back in.
I am, and I have zero scientific proof to this. I barely passed my statistics class, so I have zero scientific proof, but I am convinced that dispatching gives you ADD. I'm convinced of it. Because how many things do we pick up, hold, pick up, hold, pick up, hold? Oh, let me go get that. Like that. That's what we do. We had a trainee one time who just couldn't cut it, and he knew he couldn't cut it. And he said, I am one task minded. He said, and I can make myself multitask, but you guys are omnitasking and I can't do it. And when his CTO told me about it, I was like, that's brilliant. That's actually, we're not multitasking. We're omnitasking because we are taking everything all at once and making all the little parts coordinate. And that's why I say I'm convinced it gives you, dispatching gives you ADD.
I think it also improves our hearing to a point that can be annoying for some, but awesome for us, right? Like if you if you're at a sporting event, a restaurant, or whatever, like I've had times where I've been with friends and they'll see me like kind of eating, but like, I don't know, maybe I have a look on my face. And I remember one time a friend of mine, she goes, "Are you listening to other conversations right now?" And I said, "Yes, you have no idea what just happened to that person over there, but it was hilarious."
So the first date, my boyfriend and I, like our date, the first date, he and I went out on, we ended up at this Mexican restaurant and I was like all about it, chips, salsa. And we hear the booth behind us start talking and the two of us immediately locked eyes and we just sat there, eat our chips. And I, every time they would say something different, we would just be like, turn it off. You can't turn it off. You can't help it. Sometimes it just happens. But I was just like, we had a whole ass conversation without saying a word. Just listening and looking. And that's all it was. And I was like, man, there was another time I was at Harrah's and I was like, I'm going to go play slots for a little bit. So I went down to Harrah's and I was in Cherokee and I'm like, this machine's letting me play a little bit. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to sit here. There was a little old lady on the other side of the machine talking to this other little old lady and I had to move because it was so distracting because it was hers. It was the lady on the other side plus the lady over here. And I couldn't turn it off. And I was like, all of those conversations. And I was like, I can't even enjoy myself. I gotta go somewhere where there's not so many people talking. And you can't ever turn it off.
I've been out of dispatch 9 years and I still have it like I'm still in dispatch.
Yeah. Yeah. The ears, I don't think you'll ever lose those ears because you work so hard to train them.
Yes.
It's not just something that just you sit back and it just happens. You have to train yourself. I can't tell you how many times people in like the dispatch groups are like, I can't find my radio ear. Tell me how to do it. And I'm like, there's a lot of different ways. You know, for mine, I tell them, I want you to put on the radio and put on the news. And I want you to listen to both of them. And they're like, what? And I was like, focus, make yourself listen to both with each ear. That's how you're going to develop your split ear. And it's like a baby. You put so much time into it. You're like, no, don't grow up and go away. I worked too hard on this.
Right.
Just stay. Yeah. I don't know that I'll ever. Yeah.
It's an interesting thing because I've been at home. The way I can explain it for those who are watching and listening too is when this happens to me, it's almost like when you've got your phone or a camera and you're zooming in on something specific, but you're doing it with your hearing.
Yes.
So if I'm sitting in the living room and like my kids are playing and the TV is on, I will like zoom in. Mm-hmm. Almost in a way on whatever it is that they're talking about. I can still kind of hear the TV, right? But I'm focused in on them and then come out, hear everything, or it's so weird, but it's a cool thing.
It is. It definitely is. I'll be like, wait a minute. It's almost like a Lassie. Like your head comes to the side and you're like, wait a minute. Yeah.
Right. Timmy's in the well? What?
Right.
So you are also, as you mentioned, you're also a CTO. Mm-hmm. Now I want to ask, what was the motivation for that? And the reason I asked too is because, and I ask everyone whenever I see them as a CTO, because it's one of two things, either, excuse me, they ended up experiencing like some shit training and they decided they wanted to be a trainer so that other people that are coming in won't have to deal with crap training. You know, they want to give them a better experience. Or the other thing is they had an amazing trainer, amazing training that they went through and they wanted to become a trainer because they were inspired from whatever training they had before. Again, to mold those who are coming in, that next generation of 911, mm-hmm. and, you know, kind of leave some sort of legacy through training. What was it like for you?
For me, this was one of those things where I was like, I don't want to do this. And she was like, mm-hmm. yes, you are. And I was like,
voluntold.
Okay. So I went into it with an open mind and an mm-hmm. open heart. And I was lucky in that I had a relatively easy to train trainee to kind of get me into it. And then it was about the same time that I started doing my classes and stuff. And I mm-hmm. found a genuine love for teaching. Like I don't know where it came from. I guess it was here all along and I just didn't see it. I have no idea. But I found this genuine love for teaching. And for me, it's starting with them in the beginning and then seeing them grasp concept after concept after concept, and then seeing them. We had one that barely made it out. And I really was on the fence about whether I was even going to sign off on her. And she knows it. We all had discussions about it. Mm-hmm. And I struggled with it because she was a great, fantastic person. But it was just difficult for her to get it to click. And eventually she went in and it took her about a year and she clicked. And it clicked for her. And holy cow, she's phenomenal. She's absolutely phenomenal. So for me, it's that progression, and it's them being able to stand on their own two feet and feel confident in who they are and what they do. And when I hear the other troopers go, man, I really love it when she works our radio, I'm like, thanks.
Yeah, right. Like, yeah.
that's so for me, it's just being able to see the progression and get them to where they feel confident in what they're doing. That's a huge, I love that. I absolutely love it, because I don't want to say this and this come out wrong, but there are some people who are great TCs, who great dispatchers, but they don't know how to stand in it. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to stand in it and say, I'm good at this, because it makes them feel like they're being selfish or boastful. But
right, yes.
You have to sometimes. You yeah. have to be able to stand up and say, no, I'm a good dispatcher. I know my job and I do it well. So to see somebody to go from very beginning to the end in that progression, I love it. Absolutely love it. That's one of the things with this recent change from out of the comm center full-time to a secretarial normal schedule position. I don't get to train as much anymore. I'm still there for people to ping pong stuff off with and things like that. But that progression, man, it is wonderful. I love it. Absolutely love it.
Yeah. It takes you to a high that you can't even explain, really. You know, whether it's, if you have children, right, and you're teaching them something and they get it and you see it in their face and you're like, yes. Yes. Or, you know, even if you don't have kids, let's just say, you know, you've got pets, you know, and you're doing training with them and they finally get it and you're like, yes, you know, yes. It's that satisfaction mm-hmm. of that, you know, yeah. all that progression, as you were saying. And again, same thing with trainees in any profession I can see yeah. is like that as well. But especially when it's something that you love, mm-hmm. like 911, I was the same way. I wasn't a CTO, but there was a time where we all had to be CTOs because we were, again, like everybody, so short-staffed. And I would train a bunch of people. And again, that progression. And then that mm-hmm. moment when you see in their face or they look at you and they're like, dude, I did it. I'm like, yeah, you did it.
You did that.
You did that. How awesome is that?
Yeah. Those are the best, mm-hmm. the best moments, like the little light bulb moments. I love them.
Right. Literally. Yeah. Those are the best.
Yes.
So looking back on your career and everything, you know, the time that you were in dispatch and all, and again, you still work in there every so often, but and only if you feel comfortable talking about this, but what is maybe one call, or I'm sure there's probably multiple calls, but something that kind of sticks with you?
So we had a line of duty death on our crew. It was Gene DeMuth. It was September 8th, and I think it was 2013, I think. One of the counties had started a chase. We chased him all the way up Highway 64. It was a pretty long chase. He got out to throw stop sticks. The guy swerved and struck him. And his normal shift partner was right there beside him. And we had all worked it. It was a team effort. It was, the chase itself was beautiful. Like, it was on our end and even on their end. Like, nobody did anything wrong except for the guy. And he was wanted for, like, felony kidnapping, murder, or something. Like, they were serious charges. Like, this guy had already been involved in a domestic violence situation with another woman. It wasn't good. And it wasn't one of those things that they were willing to let go, because that's a danger. He's already proven he's going to hurt somebody.
Yeah.
So we went through that. We did have somebody from peer support. I was still kind of baby bird in the patrol, so I wasn't quite sure how it worked. And I couldn't talk about it for 5 years without crying. I just couldn't. I don't know what happened. So I had gone, we have a peer support team that is, the Highway Patrol has a peer support team. So we anytime, anywhere, any agency. So we had training for that. We had to go through the CISM and the CISD. And I'm in that class and I'm sitting next to an officer who is with my old agency that I've known because we went to high school together. And the instructor there says, you can do everything right and it still won't have the income, the outcome that it's supposed to. I had to get up and walk out of the class because that one sentence was the light bulb moment for me, because I couldn't figure out why it sat so heavy with me, why I couldn't talk about it. And I was just like, that's it. And I remember I was sitting in my car and I'm crying and he came out with me and I am boo-hooing. It was like the release. I would not talk about it before because I couldn't. And it was like all of those years, it was the release. And then I was like, man, if only I had participated in the peer support program when this happened. Like, I thought I was okay. I didn't need anything. So I never went to the debriefing. So for me, that was kind of like the mental health click of things. Like, that was when it was like, hold up, we're not talking about this and we need to be, because how many other people are carrying around that heaviness like that? Right. And I was just like, man, we've got to do better about talking about it. We've got to do better about reaching out and for ourselves and for each other, you know. But that was rough, but I'm proud of our comm center for the way we did it that day. I am so proud of us because you couldn't find fault in that chase at all. It was beautiful. And our team worked together just like it should have. It literally went all four consoles. Like, that's how big of a chase it was. So it was kind of a defining point, because up to that point, I'd never been through a line of duty, but I can take that, and I have, and use it to help others. And that's kind of the silver lining in the crappy cloud, is being able to pull something out of it that you can help others with.
Wow. How do you feel like the job has changed you?
I think it makes a lot of us become hermits almost, because how many of us have been like, I am so tired of dealing with people today. Like, we get the worst of the worst people, not saying they're horrible people, but like, we get them in their worst state and they can't help it a lot of times. Like, they're having an even worse day than we are. They're going through it. We're just hearing about it. But I think it makes us, over time, I think part of it is just the dealing with people over and over and over again and having the same scenarios over and over and over again. Even though it's different people, it's still the same scenario. So it's almost like, how many more times am I going to have to tell somebody this? To them, it's just happened once. To us, it's happened several times. So for me, I think definitely I become more of an introvert. Like, and even Connie and I were in New Orleans this past December, and there was a candlelight vigil in Jackson Square and it was fenced in. And she and I both kind of looked at the crowd and everything else. And we had gone in towards the crowd some, but then I looked at her and I said, we need to get to an exit. We need to be in an exit gate. And she said, yeah, I was just thinking the same thing. So for me, because of the training I've had, because of the things I've heard, because of the things I've seen, I'm a lot more cautious when I go out in public now and looking at the exits and things like that, whereas I wasn't before. But I think the careers also challenged me and pushed me. And like, again, I had no idea I'd be doing this. Like, this is all of this now. It's not on my radar. So I think on the good side of things, it really has pushed me and shown me more of what I'm capable of. And I think that aspect of it is good. I think everybody should kind of try to avoid being stagnant to the best they can.
I agree. Yeah. I'm always on the move, always trying to evolve as much as possible, but I do understand you as well with a lot of stuff. Again, I've been out 9 years, but there are still some things that have stuck with me and will always be there. Like, just for example, you know, my youngest was running around. She's six, and she had a fork and was going to go and sit down. And I said, do not run with that fork. Right. And she goes, oh, okay. And my kids have asked me before, like, how come you tell us like these things here and there? I know you're concerned, but, and I would tell them, you have no idea.
Yeah. I don't know if you
heard.
I don't know if you heard it, but when you said she was running with a fork, I literally gasped. I was like,
no, oh, I did hear you. Yeah. No, she was running around before. Yeah. Let me say it again. She had been running around beforehand. Like she was playing and stuff and running around. And, you know, kids will sometimes grab onto something and then run back to whatever they were doing. And because she had been running around before, when she went to go get her fork, I was like, do not run with that thing.
Yeah, put it down before you go run off.
Right. Yeah. Because I remember taking a phone call from a frantic parent where a kid was running around. Their child was running with a fork and happened to slip and fall. And it got stuck in the roof of their mouth. So, right. So, you know, end up sending people out and I'm trying to keep them as calm as possible. The kid actually wasn't screaming or anything, which was kind of weird, but the kid ended up being fine. But that's just one of those things where it changed me in that way, right? That I'm just like super aware of certain things.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's a crazy thing, but there's a lot of stuff too that I experienced and that I learned and ways that it changed me that I just love and I cherish those.
Absolutely. I've been lucky enough to be able to do conferences in a couple different states. And you were talking about the Kentucky conference a few podcasts ago and how much fun that was. And it was fun. It was a lot of fun, but I love being able to meet different people and get different perspectives. Like that's been one of the really good things with all of this is, you know, sometimes you may have like a little nugget of knowledge that you don't even know like that person needed and vice versa. Like there's been times people have talked to me and I've been like, huh, I didn't think about it that way. And it really makes you kind of reframe things and rethink things, but the ability and not just in conferences, but even like discussion boards and like Facebook posts and groups and stuff like that, the ping ponging back and forth over, you know, what would you do? What would you not do? I love those. I absolutely love those because I'm a why person and I don't ever mean it to be disrespectful, but if you tell me to do something a certain way, I'm going to do it. But then I'm going to be like, hey, can we talk about why? Is it policy or procedure? Or is it like the way you prefer? Or is it the best way? Like, and I mean, absolutely no disrespect to it, but there's a million ways for us to do this wrong, but there's a million ways for us to do this right. And if it's more efficient, you never know what you're going to come up with.
Right. And I'm the same way. I would rather know. I would rather somebody tell me straight up or at least answer me right when I'm asking the question versus just saying, oh, just do it. However, I'm like, well, if there's a reason for this specific way, tell me so that, you know, so I can do it or maybe even tweak it a little bit. But, you know, I want to know. There's got to be a reason, right?
Absolutely. And it just, I don't know. I think it improves efficiency when you ask why, because every now and then you may come across something that's a little more efficient. I mean, it happens all the time. People find CAD shortcuts and stuff like that. And you're like, wait, how'd you do that? Show me. So I mean, yeah, you never know what you're going to end up with.
Exactly. Now you, with all of the stuff that you've been doing, you have also been teaching different sessions at other conferences. What are some of the ones that you're doing and what do you have coming up?
I have the Gold Line Support Conference in May. I kind of revived an old one because I feel like it's relevant. My very first class was I Can't Wait to Be an Addict, said no one ever. And that class is based upon my family's experience with someone else's drug addiction and how it affected us and how we can help each other. So that one will be, it's May 17th and 18th. And then the other one is Complacency Kills. And that one, I think you've seen it twice now.
Yes.
But that one goes through and goes, okay, where did we misstep? What happened as a result of that misstep? And what can we do from now on to keep this from happening again? And these are published cases where there was millions of dollars of fines and just kind of like I think as we get older and we get more confident and we get seated in our position, sometimes it's autopilot and we're thinking so far ahead. We know the next question we need to ask, or we know the next thing we need to do in the protocol. We may miss stuff because we're taught to think ahead. we're taught to, you know, anticipate needs and take care of it. But I think sometimes that's to our detriment. And sometimes we have to back it up and slow down and go, let me make sure I'm getting the answer for this question. Like, let me make sure that they understand and things like that. So those are the two I've got. And then National APCO I've put in, we'll see. But I recently started a class. I created the class on domestic violence and public safety. And it's a lot bigger problem than I think people realize. I didn't even realize it was a thing at first until I was teaching a class for the 911 certification probably 2 years ago. And I mentioned in this class, it was about domestic violence. And I had said, you know, when it happened to me, this is how I felt. And this is why it was frustrating. And after the class, one of the girls came up to me and she said, it happened to me too. And he was a firefighter. And they looked at me and said, what do you want me to do? And it broke my heart. Mm-hmm. And then it happened, like other women came up and talked to me about it. And then a man did. And this is all within our realm. This is all within public safety. And I was just like, oh, we're not talking about it. We're not talking about it. So that one will start getting shopped around to different conferences. Like, I'm not sure what states I'll try to go to next for this year. But that one, I feel like is going to be an eye opener, because I don't think we're like, it's real easy to talk about it in terms of like, it's outside of us. Like, it's this frequent caller. And they call every week and one of them gets drunk and the stereotypical, but it's not, it's that's not just the extent of it. So that's my most recent one. We'll kind of see how that one fares out.
And well, I'm looking forward to it. 'Cause you're right. You can see stuff in the news as well. And then there's some times that it's not in the news and, you know, it's just, is definitely out there. So I think it's a good topic, definitely, that you're bringing to light, and to have people come up to you afterwards to say, basically, there were probably ones who felt as though they were alone.
Absolutely.
Didn't feel that. So it's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that one I'll probably put in. I think I may have already put it in. Our state conference is late April, early May. Are you going to that one?
I believe I'm going to be there at that one. Yes.
I'll put in for that one at state too. So our conference will probably feature that one. If I get picked, it's never a guaranteed. I got to go through the vetting process.
But, yeah.
But I'm hoping that one I'll be able to do that one, at least in North Carolina this year.
Awesome. Well, Marissa, it has been awesome to have you on this podcast, to share your story, to learn about your history, especially with your family and everything that you come from this. It's been in your blood since day one. And to hear about, how you feel about, training as it is and where you're at now, the sessions that you're doing. But I have one last question for you. Mm-hmm. If you could go back in time with the knowledge that you have now, to talk to yourself in the beginning of your dispatching career, what is some advice that you would give yourself?
First, I would say you are not alone. However you're feeling from the beginning to the end, I promise you, you are not alone. There are other people who feel the exact same way. And then breathe. Just breathe. Remember to breathe. Slow it down. Nice and easy. That was my problem at first. And then just try to learn as much as you can. Like, there's so much out there that you can learn. Just be like a sponge, just suck it all in. It'll all work out.
Perfect. Awesome. Again, thank you so much for being on, and especially during your lunch break. and for sharing this, this knowledge, your history, your experience, just your story. Thank you so much. How can people get a hold of you if they're looking for sessions or any training or anything like that? How can people get a hold of you?
I'm on LinkedIn and I'm also on Facebook. My name is spelled a little bit differently, so when you put it up, you'll be able to see how it's spelled. My last name, the only name I have is my only common spelling name is my second last name. That's Walters. But yeah, I'm on Facebook and I'm on LinkedIn. And then I post, LinkedIn is more or less like where I post like my conferences and things like that. And like, I am fully willing to speak at other conferences. I put in for papers. I pick usually one or two a year. and just kind of go from there. See awesome. How it picks out.
All right. Excellent. Well, again, thank you so much for being on. And I will be right back here with you in just one moment. For those who are watching and listening, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us. And that's going to be WTTpodcast@gmail.com. Once again, that is WTTpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. That is @91podcast. You can like us on Facebook. That is facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. This episode has been sponsored by InDigital. And a big shout out to Facebook subscribers as well as patrons of the podcast. If you want to join and help support us, you can go to facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast/support. And then also, if you want to be a patron of the podcast, that is patreon.com/WTT podcast. There's a lot of bonus content. There's swag, discounts to the store, all kinds of stuff. So make sure to check all that out. There's a lot more to come. You can see this on YouTube, Twitter, as well as LinkedIn and Facebook. And then you can listen 24/7 on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, your favorite podcasting app, and withinthetrenches.net. Have a good one, everyone. We'll see you in the next one.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to WTTpodcast@gmail.com.